Hello, and welcome to the Warlord Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be discussing the original Warlord series from DC Comics. In this Warlord Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Warlord 44 to 47. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
A little tired, but I'm doing good. Well, when we left off with Warlord 43, Travis had just gotten back together with Tara, but then left with Eitan, the kid he knew from way back when, who's grown up, and they're heading out to go find out what happened to Travis's daughter, Jennifer.
Yes.
And again, what I love about this is, though the clue is in at the beginning of every issue, it's not like there's a heap of continuity we need to memorize or anything.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to mention these four issues have an OMAC backup story. I thought it was, I'm not going to say a roller coaster ride kind of a story. I'm going to say it was a carnival roller coaster kind of a ride set up by a carnival that was a little, you know, pressed for time. And you look at that ride and it's kind of shaky and you're wondering, is this thing going to fall apart?
Yeah.
Because I felt from installment to installment, they get through an 8-page adventure, do a zig to the next one, goes in one direction, a zag to the next one, goes in another direction. There was no through line. I found them a slog to read just the 8 pages.
Yeah, I felt it a slog, and this is one of the things, you know, back in the day, if we were recording a podcast, if they existed then, we'd have been like, they wasted my 5 or 10 cents on this nonsense. Because I complained about backup stories sometimes not being written very well or up to the same standard or having anything to do with the current comic that I'm buying, and that's exactly what they feel like.
Well, figure we get 17 pages of the main stories, 8 pages of the backup story. It's a total of 25 pages. We're paying 50 cents an issue at this point off the rack, provided we'd gotten in our DeLorean or TARDIS and hopped back to that time frame. So at 2 cents a page, yeah, 16 cents of it was wasted.
Yep, not good.
And it's funny, because I'm willing to give the 4 cents for the 2-page title spread or whatever that really doesn't advance the Warlord story at all. I'm willing to just chalk it up to, hey, it's a nice piece of art. I'm good with it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, Grell does a good job. He's an artist. I mean, he's a writer and an artist, of course. But those 2-page splashes are kind of like his thing. You know, like Hickman has the white pages with the bubbles and discussing things. This is kind of Grell's thing, is he always does a 2-page splash. They're done very well, though.
I think they're done well. And to me, they are evocative of kind of the opening credits or title card of a TV show.
Yeah, exactly.
And that would be the shot, if this were televised, that they'd hang on and just kind of pan around for a few minutes or whatnot, or not minutes, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Long enough to establish the theme song or ringtone, as current shows only have time for whatever the Warlord tune would be.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's kind of like, you know, on a TV show where they'd have some credits telling you about whatever, you know, they put a little text box and they're like, in the savage world of Skitarish, you know, life is the constant struggle, blah, 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 blah. Just kind of setting the stage for the world in case you've never read this book before.
You know, what's funny is, in my mind, if this were done as a syndicated show about 2 decades, 3 decades back, that's exactly what they would have done.
Yeah.
You'd have had the announcer, he'd have come over, Travis Morgan, he's in Skitarish, expect the unexpected.
Yeah.
The Warlord.
You could totally see that in those 80s, 70s, 80s shows.
Exactly.
Like, oh my gosh, you can feel it. It has that vibe.
I mean, you know, you look at how the original Thundercats had, I don't know, a minute or so for its theme song, maybe a minute and a half. Whereas when they redid it, they had to compress it down to like a 10-second ringtone.
Yeah.
That's as much time they tossed the title card up for. So I'm curious what a The Warlord music would sound like.
Me
but that's
too.
Exactly where they'd use it.
I would love something Conan-esque. Conan had a very nice, you know, opening music song when they had the movies and stuff. Da, 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 da. It's just very iconic, but it's something of that ilk, because this is so, it's not Conan, but it's of that same genre almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the Schwarzenegger movie, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. I need to put that on the list at some point.
Yeah, there's some of us who've been listening to a Conan-specific podcast, and actually the guy's kind of, it's not a great podcast, honestly, but he plays that theme music at the beginning and end, and I'm just like, I just love the song. Yeah.
It's amazing how much a good theme song can really make or break a property.
It really can. It really, really can. So, yeah. But I'll tell you what, this was fun. The funny thing about this is you say his name is Eitan, and it is. But for the life of me, I always call the guy Anton. I don't know why. I stick an extra in.
I'm probably mispronouncing half the names of the characters we talk about both here and elsewhere. Because they don't come with a pronunciation guide, I can be either lazy or dyslexic reader at times, I guess.
Yeah.
And it could be Aton, it could be Eitan, it could be, I don't know.
Aton, who knows?
I just try to be consistent with my mispronunciations, if nothing else.
It's just funny, I stick an extra letter in there for some reason.
There have been a couple of names, I do that too, because again, Anton is a name that we're familiar with, Eitan, not so much.
That's what it is, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why when they take names and alienize them, for lack of a better term, and switch characters around or whatever. Those are the kinds of names I'll often mispronounce.
Yeah, exactly. Now, one thing I thought was really cool about this, okay, you know, you get that whole setup for Jennifer, his mm-hmm. daughter, who the boat's wrecked and...
Yeah, issue here 44, yeah.
Yeah, kind of captured, whatever. But they go to a new part of Skitaris, which they're talking about the northern polar opening, and I think it was called the Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, it's almost like overcast. I'm guessing the lip of the land keeps it almost in shadows. Even though there's sunlight, you can see, there's never bright sunlight. It's almost like that right before dusk, which I thought could be very cool.
I know we've been to one of the Terminators before. I thought it was the northern one, but I'm not sure. Because the conceit of Skartaris is it's the inner shell of the Earth, if you will.
Yeah.
And this is the part where it kind of wraps around to the outer part, and we're at the point where neither the interior sun nor the exterior sun is really casting light on these things.
Yeah, so it's kind of creepy because, you know, my head, when I first was reading that, I'm thinking, this could be where vampires could be or something.
Yeah. Well, and there's a later issue, I think it's the final one we're going to talk about tonight, where they do some stuff with how the sky works in Skartaris to facilitate certain other things.
I thought that was clever.
I thought it was too. A little convenient, but okay.
Yes, exactly.
I like how on this first page, though, of once we're past the title points, really it's page 4, they remind us that Travis had gotten rid of the Hellfire Sword, why it was special, and it's like it wasn't worth the price on my soul the black magic was taking and stuff. That's why we're going to this town to presumably find an armorer so he can get another sword.
Exactly, yeah. He kind of tossed it into the lake, I remember. It was like mm-hmm. a lady of the lake who took it down, which I thought was kind of cool. And I love that sword. It was powerful, but it almost started to corrupt them mentally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he was wise to get rid of it.
Yes, I agree.
Now, we get the temporary parting of ways here, as often happens when they enter a city of, I got to go do this, you go do that. And he sends Anton, basically, just get yourself a drink or whatever. Try not to get into too much trouble.
Yeah.
Because presumably, Travis is off to go get a sword. But we only see Anton out and about long enough to go play a shell game at a bar, lose his horse, Travis's horse, and Travis gets there later and finds out that's what happened, and Travis is not happy.
Literally decks the guy, which I thought was appropriate. You lost our horses? Like, what the hell? And that was kind of funny, and the guy's over there just smirking after he decks Eitan, just whack, and is like, hey, let's make a deal. You know, what a schemer.
Well, it's, I think to Eitan's benefit, the guy stepped in because I think Travis was really ready to deck him again. And it's not that he lost the horses. It's that they needed the horses to find his daughter, Jennifer.
Exactly. You now have caused potential harm to my family.
Yes. And it's interesting that this guy doing the shell game, which is literally the classic three-card Monty with the shells and stuff, put a pebble under one of them, mix them around and whatnot.
Yeah.
He deals with collectibles.
Of
There's
course.
This jewel, it's in a tower in a maze, get me that, I'll give you back your horses.
Which is so, just so you know, Conan-esque. We've seen these stories, but I love them.
We've seen Warlord's been sent on quests before.
Yes.
I like how he was smart enough to ask, who does this jewel belong to?
Yes.
Like I said, oh, that's not important. Not important. I'm like, it probably is going to be important.
I think that's paramount.
Yeah. I love, though, how he escorts these two to the walled maze. They go in, he opens the gate and stuff, and then locks the gate behind them just to give them a little more incentive to go get the stuff.
Yeah, you can't get out. If you do make it out alive, you know, there's a key in there to unlock the door. It'll basically say you have to succeed or you will die.
Yep.
Wow. Nice guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, of course, we get the maze. They have a couple of booby traps they've got to deal with there. And of course, Travis is paranoid and been in Skartaris long enough to avoid a few of them and almost loses Eitan in one of them.
And then they have some wild animals, too.
Yeah, rabbit. I don't know if those are dogs or wolves or what.
Yeah, they kind of look like dogs. Dog, wolf, I don't know. One or the other.
But they're rabid, so it's like, okay, let's pull out the .44 Magnum and start shooting. And I thought that was as much to get rid of the dogs as to get rid of the bullets. And I was expecting him to need the bullet later, because that's how that kind of thing goes.
Exactly.
But they get up to the tower. It seems to have just empty suits of armor lying around at the base of the spiral staircase of doom, as every tower in Skartaris seems to have. But when they get a ways up, Eitan notices those armor statues aren't staying still. They're coming up behind us.
Yeah, almost like bed knobs and broomsticks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, remember that Disney movie where basically all the armor came to life and there's a war fought with the Nazis? It's almost like that. They start following them and attacking, and you can't really kill them because there's nothing there. They're enchanted.
Well, I think Travis's solution of let's take this burning urn that's lighting the way, hit him with it, spread the fire down the thing, and start a raging inferno. I'm not sure he had many other options, but that now puts them on a very tight ticking clock when they get up to the room with the jewel and the key of what the hell are we going to do here?
Yeah, and they were so close. Didn't you have a feeling that they could grab both?
I think if Travis had been of a mind to, they could have. But Eitan was at least smart enough to grab the key over the jewel, and then they, I think, dive out the window into what I assumed was a fairly shallow pool outside of it.
That's what I thought, too, and I thought, yeah, that's pretty high. They could have been killed, but oh well, they dove in and they made it.
They then get back to the bar, deal with the guy who set up the whole quest for them. He's like, well, I have other enterprises, you know, and quests you could go on, but Travis decides to try his chance at the shell game. And he spots the shell in the guy's hand, which he points out with the sharp edge of his sword, lopping the hand off. The guy doesn't seem to be bleeding at all, much to his luck. But Travis knew he'd cheated Eitan and whatnot, so the guy was ready for his comeuppance.
Yeah, he was in pain. He's yelling, "My hand." But I'm like, was that a Comics Code Authority that he's not bleeding, or is this guy a cyborg? I don't know. But yeah, definitely no blood. But I like that he lopped off his hand.
These have the Comics Code Authority on them, so I'm sure that's some of it. I am expecting we're going to see this guy again.
Me too. He just seems like just shifty enough that he's interesting, that he can set things up.
He's interesting, and he's now very upset with Travis.
Has an axe to grind. Let's go.
Yeah, bone to pick, an axe to grind. One of the two.
Or, I almost said a bone to grind. I'm like, that's not it.
That's not it. And then pretty much out of nowhere, Shakira shows up to hang with them again.
And I have a question with you on that last little epilogue page with Shakira.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they get to the town and they're looking, basically, you know, they're looking at the city. And she's looking at the screen and it looks like there's some little fireworks on the screen. And I'm assuming those are like explosions.
I took those to be her morphing from the cat to human form.
Okay, that's what that is. And then she's crying. I'm like, what is she? Why is she crying?
So my take on this is, first off, they're going back to the place we had seen early on in the series, near where his jet crashed. He's picking up some ammo.
Yeah.
And this is the place where I think he found the tramway to the outer world or something.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
She goes in. She's clearly familiar with this ancient city. She knows how to operate one of the controls. She pulls up the image of a city. That makes her cry. She turns it off, seems a little depressed as she walks back to Travis and stuff.
Yeah, what do you think the meaning of that is? Because I didn't get it. It was lost on.
I'm wondering if she's from ancient Atlantis.
Oh, that would be cool. All right. And we're going to find out together as we proceed with the story. But that piqued my interest, and I thought we were going to get some payoff, but we did not in these four issues.
Not in these four issues. I took this as part of Grell's kind of grand plan for where this character is at and is going.
Okay, that was enough to pique my curiosity because I really do like Shakira. I like cats and I like her. And I was like, why is she crying? I don't get it. Is she sad? Like, and I'm like, all right, that makes sense. And I like your guess. That's a good guess.
Again, I've read all this stuff, but it was like 15 years ago and I do not remember the details. And this is actually a little bit more than I had recalled about her backstory and stuff. And again, it's not clear. It's just really four panels there implying She knows this equipment. She pulled up the city by choice. It made her sad. She turned it off. So it's like something about her backstory.
Okay. Makes sense. All right. Cool.
So yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. I did notice how Travis still didn't do anything about a sword.
Yeah, still didn't get a sword.
And we really don't know how he spent his time while Eitan was losing the horses.
Yeah, exactly. So he has that little golden sword, which is a so-so, not very balanced, not something he wants, and now no bullets as we proceed.
Now he has bullets because he picked up his ammunition here.
That's true. That's true. He picked them up right at the end.
This is his whole reload periodically kind of system.
Right.
Shall we head over to the next issue?
Yeah, let's do that.
Because we're going to skip over that OMAC thing.
Thank God.
Only thing of note is there was a character in there that I swear was a dead ringer for Wolverine.
I thought the same thing, and I know who you're talking about.
All right, Warlord 45. We get another opening page, this time going into the two-page title spread with Jennifer, this guy who found her, who at this point, she can't speak his language, he can't really speak her language. We never get a name for this guy.
Nope.
So until we do, I'm just going to refer to him as the guy. Gotta call him something.
It started off where I thought when she mentioned the name Travis Morgan right there and you saw his eyes, he was going to gut her because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not.
But if you go to the page after he's taken out the saber-toothed tiger, which is why he was drawing the sword, he makes a comment she doesn't hear.
Yes.
That he acknowledges to this box he's carrying that she had said the name of the mortal enemy Travis Morgan.
Exactly. So he was getting ready to whack her. Or not whack her for that. He was taking care of the lion, but Travis Morgan is their enemy.
It's the enemy of the box.
The box. Whoever the box is. I have no clue.
Well, I think there's one obvious theory.
Okay.
Demios.
Ah, that makes sense. Yes. All right. That makes complete sense. So this is some just minion of Demios.
That's what I'm thinking, but I'd have to go back to when we saw Demios die. There was like a hand. I don't know if somebody had gotten the ring or what. I don't remember the specifics of that kind of subplot.
Okay.
I don't know if we've seen the box before this guy.
All right. That makes sense.
But I like how Grell is keeping this subplot alive. This time we get about 4 pages. Other times we've only gotten a page or so. But it's something to where if you're coming every issue, you at least know this is going on.
Yeah, I'm reminded of it. And nothing major has occurred, but it keeps it front and center that it's going to play something important in the future.
Yeah. Well, and she's surviving. She obviously wants to get back to her dad at some point. Her dad's out looking for her, so we know this is a relevant part of the story, and the two will intersect at some point, hopefully.
Yeah. Were you surprised to see him go back to Munchkin Land, by the way? I know it's not called that. It's called the Dwelling of Dwarves or something.
Actually, yeah, I was surprised.
It was like, we're headed back there.
I was also surprised we didn't get any mention of Mongo or, at this point, what had happened with Machiste and Mariah.
Exactly. They're kind of, I know they were taken to a different place, different time, but we got no updates through any of these 4 issues, which I was very surprised about that.
But Mongo was, I think, of these dwarves, or at least, yes. You know, give or take a few, I don't know, millennia or what have you.
Correct.
So the fact they happened, I guess they had his old sword.
Yeah, which I honestly, just my brain, I couldn't remember. I guess he must have left it there when he got the previous sword, but they were keeping it for him, which was very convenient. And apparently, it's convenient for Grell because he likes the sword better than the golden sword. And honestly, it matches his garb a little better.
Yeah, it's a better design.
Yeah, so I like this sword a bit more than what he was using previously.
Well, and I think the Hellfire sword that protects him from magic and his enemy is a magician, it's a little convenient.
Yeah, it almost set it up where Demios is almost impotent when fighting Travis. So you gotta get rid of it if Demios is coming back for him to be the big bad.
But at least they'd set it up of you've got to always draw blood, there is a price, all that. So the way they got rid of it didn't seem like a cheat.
Exactly. I agree with that. So it was done with purpose. We can see it coming.
Yeah, but without it being overly telegraphed either.
Exactly. Like, I knew we're going to see Demios again. I didn't think of the box. And now that you said that, I'm like, of course, duh.
Well, and that's where I think Grell is really good. He's able to set things up without telegraphing them. And there is a fine line between the two sometimes.
There really is. There's a skill and an art to it where you're planting the seeds and you're playing fair. And if somebody's being vigilant, they'll pick up on the clues and piecemeal it together and have a good guess. Or they could be completely off. They could get it. but you don't feel like you cheated or like something was just found. Oh, here's this thing, and it never existed, you know? And there was no buildup to it, which at times feels frustrating when you're reading someone who does that.
Well, you give too much setup, and it's like, well, obviously this is where they're going to go. Where else could they go? You don't give enough setup, and it's like, what the hell is this? And wait, I didn't catch that. How did that play out? It feels like there's a missing link sometimes, because often there is. But to get it to where you've set up just enough that you've played fair and not so much that you've telegraphed where you're going, again, Grell's doing a great job on that.
I agree. He's done a fantastic job.
Because, again, I'd have to go reread the part where he got the Hellfire Sword to remember exactly the way in which he left this sword here. But again, that set up him coming back to get it.
Exactly. Yeah. Very cool.
Now, of course, we know to expect the unexpected in Skartaris. So, you know, next page, we've got a Cyclops attacking this village of the dwarves, stealing one of them and going off. And of course, the others are like, well, we'll be safe for a while. He's gotten one and he's gone. Travis is like thinking they're nuts. And he's like, well, we're rather tasty. You know, we're small. What can we do?
Yeah, we're rather tasty, which is just hilarious that that comment was made.
And of course, Travis is like, well, there's something I can do. And of course, Eitan and Shakira aren't going to let him go alone. Although there's going to come a point where I wouldn't blame him if they did.
Yeah, exactly. And they're often after these creatures. And it looks like there's about three Cyclops.
There is, but I liked how they made a point of pausing as they hit this chasm they had to go across. And there's this fallen tree or tree that grew to the side, whatever, that's acting as a bridge there.
Yeah, I like that too, because you've seen things like that in movies before.
Yeah. Well, and they're realizing that we couldn't fight one of these guys off. If there's more of them, we're going to have a hell of a time. So they go in with a plan.
Yeah, we need to have a plan before we walk across this thing and may not have a quick escape.
Yeah. And then we get to where the Cyclopses are, I guess their cave or their whatever that is, where their headquarters, and we see that they've got a few other dwarves as captives, and they're getting ready to make lunch.
Yeah, of these little dwarves. And I really loved how Shakira played a central part of the plan to release the ladies that have been captured. I just love that she used her skills.
Well, I like that, and I like she's willing to, but she's very clear she's not happy about this plan.
No, she's not.
So they manage to free the dwarves, which of course alerts the Cyclopses. They come a-running. Travis is pretty much ready for that, but realizes these guys, while they may knock down, they get up pretty quick too. So they hightail it out, go back to that bridge. Eitan has done most of what they set out to do, but can he make the bridge collapse while Travis is still on it? And of course, the Cyclopses are not far behind, so he's like, yeah, do it. And of course, Travis looks like he does a somersault off the bridge onto the ledge.
He is a very good acrobat. That's pretty amazing.
I mean, even if this were Tarzan, I'd think it's a little far-fetched, but, you know, hey, it works.
And keeps his armor and his helmet on, everything.
Yes, yes. With those wings on the helmet, that's surprising.
Yeah.
But fortunately, there's a big boulder near the edge of the thing, because one of the Cyclopses manages to grab a ledge. They all get together, including at least one of the dwarves, maybe only one of the dwarves, push the boulder, knock the guy down, boom, we have saved the dwarf stuff.
And apparently wiped out the population of Cyclops in this part of Skartaris, for all we know.
At least this group of three. There could be more that come back later. I don't know.
Exactly.
I love, though, how at the end, if this was a good plan, but you almost died, Travis, why didn't you just pull out your gun and shoot him?
Exactly.
And Travis is, didn't think of that.
I know. I was like, that was kind of funny. It's true. He could have pulled it out and just pop, 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 and moved on their way. So,
I think that panel was there because Grell knew somebody was going to write in saying, well, why didn't he? You know, and at least address it here. And I don't mind it when they do it this way because it was kind of funny.
It was.
There are other times where they'll do, this is kind of lampshading. It's like, we've got a problem in the story, but let's point it out to kind of diffuse the critiques or whatever. There are a lot of times it's not done as artfully as I thought this was.
I thought this was done well. It worked for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get your adrenaline pumping. He didn't think about it. Boom. I'm doing backflips to just try and get off the log, man. Leave me alone.
Definitely some fun stuff.
Yeah. Backseat driver. Yeah. Keep it shut.
What I think the other response could have been of, well, why didn't you mention that when we were making the plan?
Awesome.
All right. Let's move on to that next issue of 46.
Yeah, 46. By the way, what was funny is the cover was of almost like the Cyclops on that same log, which happened in the last issue.
Yeah, I think they may have gotten the order of the covers maybe mixed up a little. This cover came in late because this one fits better for the previous issue. I agree entirely.
Yeah, so I was like, I didn't think about it being late, but I was just like, I wonder why. Maybe just to remind you, but okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to find that out if anyone knows.
Yeah.
Finally, though, Travis and Eitan get to the wreck of the ship, and it's like, okay, now we've got to go find Jennifer.
Yep, she's missing, and we're off and about and run into a dinosaur.
What I find interesting is okay, let's split up. Eitan, you go south. Shakira and I will go north. And I'm like, I kind of think Shakira should have gone with Eitan because the two of them might need help from each other, whereas Travis can usually take care of himself.
Exactly. He's more of the... Eitan's not the guy at a fighting skill level up to Travis's level. Yeah, so they would have made a better team, maybe complementing each other.
But I also like how Grell addresses that of up north is the land of shadows, which apparently is a really dangerous place.
Yeah.
So, okay, Travis and Shakira going makes sense in that light.
Exactly.
The fact they're doing it on the blue course with the golden armor that was on the cover of the previous issue goes to your theory that they got the covers on the wrong issues.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. It's like, interesting.
Yeah, I am curious what happened with that. Anyways, we get the title page. There's a dinosaur. While Travis is able to shoot it, the thing, you know, still rams into his horse, knocks him off the thing, causing him, I think, a blow to the head.
And did you get the fear at this point that this whole issue was going to be a dream sequence?
Yes.
Me too. Because you see the little, he's seeing stars, he got knocked off. I'm like, oh God, here we go.
And I think there's grounds for thinking it was, although at the end it's very clearly not.
Exactly.
We've had enough of these, is it a delusion or not kind of issues. Honestly, I don't favor that storytelling technique, but it's okay. The lady we get at the bottom of page 5 there,
yeah,
I took to be Death.
Oh, that's who you took it as. That makes sense because of the little skulls on her.
Well, and the, have you come for me so soon?
Yeah, okay, yeah, okay.
She's speaking as if she's Death. Now, what's interesting is this is well before, I believe, the Endless were really kind of set up the way they were by Alan Moore in the Swamp Thing series, starting there, going into Constantine, Sandman, etc., etc.
Interesting.
So Destiny had been around the DC universe for a while. I don't know that we'd really seen the personification of Death that we see later, who's more of a goth thing than this one, but you could argue it's just another, again, look for the character.
Exactly.
If it's the same one or not, and it may not be.
Yeah, I do like the look, though. I think it's kind of cool. There's even another character about Marvel, I can't remember her name, who wears the little skull bikini thing. I can't remember who it is.
It's not the one from Kazar in the Savage Land, is it?
It might be. I've just seen it before.
Yeah. Looks uncomfortable.
But this was kind of a cool issue. I mean, it was weird, but the thing that I didn't like about that, this was the least favorite of the four, is because I was afraid through the whole issue that I'm in a dream sequence.
Yeah, and the whole Death has come, but not for Travis, but for Shakira.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the, does she get written out of the series at this point?
That's what I was worried about. I was like, oh, maybe she was there, and this is the end of her. And you almost see them descending into hell at one point, you know? Mm-hmm. It gets really kind of dark and trippy, and that's where I was like, man, I feel like this is going to be an issue I don't like. What's going to happen?
Yeah, I would say, for me, while it was all right, I liked it enough, it was not my favorite of the bunch. I did like how we got a reminder of the guy who trained him at the Gladiator School.
Yeah.
Stryker and a few others that he's killed over the series so far. With the, there's a lot of names that are faces that I can't put names to all of them kind of a thing. Because he's killed a number of people.
Exactly. Yep.
And, you know, we get him fighting them, but he's got a mission, so... When he called out to Azrael, maybe that's Death's name here? I don't know. And did we see this character in one of the other dream sequences?
We could have, possibly. I should have gone back and looked, but I didn't.
This is where I need to find a better way to be taking notes on some of the stuff, because it's hard to keep track.
Yeah, because we saw this dream another dream sequence, but it was probably 3 or 4 recordings ago.
Oh, probably. Yeah, maybe more. At least.
Maybe more.
There have been at least 2 or 3 dream sequences, one of which he was on the verge of death. And I think that might have been the one I was thinking of that I think was one of the earlier ones.
Yeah. But this whole thing felt like a story that was being told that had no impact on the movement of the characters. And then I thought, it's all fake except for the scarring you see on his chest at the end.
Yeah, because he gets branded with a Roman numeral X to remind him that he's lost a decade of his life in return for saving Shakira. And then when he wakes up from the dream sequence, he has claw marks in the form of an X, which the dinosaur absolutely did not do at the beginning of the issue.
Exactly.
But I took this as a pivotal issue between those two characters of Travis and Shakira, of the lengths he will go to for her.
Yeah, it almost built, and I know it sounds weird, but almost like a love sequence that he really cares for her, and he really would do whatever it takes to protect her and save her. And he doesn't view her as a pet either, because she's in human form most of the time. It's very weird.
I don't think it's a romantic love, but I think she's...
maybe a best friend's love.
I was going to say almost adopted into his family to some degree. She is under his protection. That is abundantly clear.
Yeah, it's almost... that's a perfect way of saying it. Like, adopted. Like, they're almost like family members. There's a love there. I will protect you. You're one of mine. You're one of my tribe, my family, mm-hmm. my people. It's gone to that level. Yeah. And by the way, you're a cool cat.
Yeah, I think he's always been fond of her, but it clearly establishes it's not just a, yeah, you can part ways anytime. It's he will go to extreme lengths for her in a way that he would not for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, granted, we've seen him go to some crazy lengths to go save people he's hardly known, but I don't know that he'd I don't know that he'd go to hell for just anybody, but I don't know, maybe.
It's possible. And I liked at the very, very end of this issue, you got the epilogue where they reminded you that Jennifer's going to be coming up. Just FYI, mm-hmm. we haven't forgotten, it's coming.
Well, it's funny because I've read some other series where, and I think it was maybe Super Dinosaur from Kirkman, reading an issue, there was one page as a subplot to some characters that weren't named. And in the context of that issue, it was complete non sequitur. It's like, why is this page here? Here we've got Grell using a couple of pages, sometimes one, sometimes four or five in a given issue, to keep the subplot with Jennifer going, establish it and get it going. And even in the short increment we get, it's got meaning. It's not just we've tuned in and we catch nothing. And the fact that we know Travis is looking for her, you know, again, gives it the more connective tissue than just a seemingly random subplot with characters that don't clearly fit into the rest of the issue.
And at this point, knowing what we know, and Jennifer does not know, we're hoping Travis gets there before something comes to fruition that may be harmful for her.
Yes, we know there's going to be a comeuppance at some point. So, shall we move on to the next issue?
Yeah, last one of the four.
Yeah, and this one was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I liked it.
Because the title is Hunter's Moon,
mm-hmm.
given the whole interior of the Earth, Skartaris kind of a thing, having a moon, kind of interesting.
Yeah, I was like, huh, all right.
But we start with Jennifer and the guy. He looks like he's about to literally stab her in the back, but he's then filling a goblet with his blood, because he can't bring himself to do it for her, because he's taken a liking to her, and feeds that to the box, which, you know, for his master.
Very creepy. Here's some blood for you in a cup.
So I'm not sure what's in the box, whether it's Demios's ring, if there's a tiny Demios growing in there, if it's a head, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a movie with that. What's in the box? Oh, what was that? I can't remember.
Oh, there have been a number of movies like that.
Yeah, the movie Seven.
Ah, yeah. They even did that as a subplot in Crusade that spun out of Babylon 5. The captain had a box he could go to for advice, but he knew it would lie to him, too. So that was the whole mystery that they never got to fruition, because 13 episodes isn't enough. But this one, I'm expecting by issue 50 that we'll get to that, what's going on with this and Demios and stuff, because the first caption here tells us it's Castle Demios.
Exactly, yeah. It's coming. It's on the horizon at this point.
Yeah, and 50 seems like a good place to put that, in my opinion.
Yeah. This was the book also where we get the explanation of how the sun kind of orbits around Skartaris to create these dark...
Was it the sun orbiting or the moon orbiting?
The moon orbiting. I'm sorry, it's the moon orbiting. I think it was the moon.
It's the moon, and the whole... it's doing like a double helix crazy orbit thing.
Wasn't that weird?
That was crazy, yeah.
I was like, all right, we'll go with this. Here we go. I'm like, he's a pilot, but just to think this out, I'm like, I don't know. Is he a physicist as well? I don't know.
We know he's a pilot. We know he's a good shot. We don't know what other education he's got other than he's pretty smart and knowledgeable on a number of things. And the hole, he was the one, who, again, we've got the holes at the top of the bottom. It curves around, all that sort of a thing.
I mean, it makes sense. I just don't think many of us would come up with, I think the moon travels in a helix in this pattern. That's just like, okay, but it made sense. All right, cool.
Well, and it could be no bigger than this. It's in a low orbit, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got some kind of physics
background
of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was reading that. I was like, man, this guy's pretty sharp. All right, here we go.
I took this page as Grell needed a moon.
Yes, he did.
Let's insert a moon. Let's explain how it could be.
And it works.
And it works. And if you're going to have an exposition dump here, doing it on a page or so, you know, like this, where we get the diagram, it's quick, it's easy, it's out of the way. It didn't bother me at all.
It didn't bother me either. It's that one page, and there's a diagram, and you can kind of follow it. You're like, okay, it makes sense, even though I was thinking I probably wouldn't have ever thought of that on my own. But okay, great, cool.
I absolutely would not have thought of that on my own.
Exactly. But it works.
But getting to where it's like, oh, we've got the moonlight, and it's making the animals a little crazy, et cetera, you know, it's like, okay, this is something that can be fun in Skartaris. You want a moon? Fine. You got to explain it to me. You did. I'm good. Let's go with it.
Yeah, you see the wolves howling, and then since the moon is out and it's a full moon, Travis decides he's going to go hunting.
Mm-hmm.
With a blade. Not his gun, a blade, which I thought was interesting, but cool.
He's hunting, not massacring.
Exactly.
He'll tackle the animal and then slit its throat or whatever he does, yeah.
A lot of skill.
And then he realizes on the way back to their camp that there are some guys who've been attacked. So he hears the sound of a battle. He goes after to see what's going on, sees more bodies, gets to where there's a clearing, and there's one guy getting torn into by a bunch of other guys. So he's got to wade in. And of course, the one guy's outnumbered, so that's the side he's going to go on.
It helps him massacre that other group, the dark-haired guys.
Yeah, because they're like Cro-Magnon types or cavemen or something equivalents.
Yeah, they kind of look like cavemen.
And then he realizes, by the way this guy is dressed, he's probably from the outside world.
Yeah, he's carrying a swashbuckling sword and boots and some white pants. And yeah, definitely from the outside and speaks English. Huh, there you go.
He's also got like reddish hair with a white streak at the front of the center, which is just enough like Jason Blood that when
yes.
I first seen this on some later covers, I'm like, I know that the demon's not in this, but it's a cool look, so okay.
Yeah. But we do find out the guy is Mikola Rostov. He's a Russian guy. He has a Russian accent.
Russian guy, knows Mariah Romanova.
Yep, knows Mariah.
Wants to know what happened to her. And then Travis is like, well, how the hell did you find me? He's like, well, you know, Professor Lakely told me. And he's like, oh, Lakely again. Because that's how the other researchers found him. That's how, I think, Stryker found him. That's how the guy who was chasing Stryker with Jennifer found him. I mean,
Lakely is the bane of his existence.
Yes. I would love to see a backup feature or some such on Lakely where he's going off again on this thing. Some people think he's a crackpot, but somebody else wants to know more. And then later we'd see them in Skartaris or something crazy like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to see the other side of that comment.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But this guy apparently taught Mariah fencing, and it's implied they had a relationship. And, you know, Travis is more than happy to explain what's going on, but it's like they found a meteorite, it opened a time warp, they're drawn into the past when Wizard rules Skartaris, they may get back to our time, they may not, don't know. All that over a quick campfire and cooking the meat he brought.
Exactly.
I don't think he's gotten back to Shakira at this point.
No, he's literally just left her. And seemingly, at this point, has no concern over her safety or how she's doing. Which, that's how Travis kind of is. He goes off on an adventure and totally forgets about the ones he left behind. Over and over, this guy does it. But, I mean, it's one of his character traits or flaws.
Well, she's able to take care of herself.
Yeah, she's doing her own thing.
And he doesn't know if this guy's on the up and up.
Correct, yeah. So he's before he's bailing, he's talking with this guy, sharing a meal, trying to get some information. That's the way I'm taking it right now.
Mm-hmm. And then the guy wanders off to go hunt. He comes back, and then more of these caveman types with swords, shields, and nets come after Travis and this guy and capture them.
Yeah, they get the best of them, which I was like, all right. And they're cannibals.
Which surprises Mikola, but he then quickly, it's funny, you know, the moon rises. He's able to break free of the ropes when he turns into a werewolf.
Yeah, that was awesome. I was like, werewolf by night, here we go.
And Travis is like, what?
Exactly, what is going on?
And he sees the guy as a werewolf just ripping these other guys to shreds. He's about to shoot him when the moon gets obliterated by a cloud. He turns back into a man and is able to explain what's going on.
Yeah, almost like he came to Skitaris to avoid the cycle, the lunar cycle, which is like every 28 days or so often, you know, the full moon rising, so that he's not cursed by lycanthropy to turning into this creature. And little did he know that it's worse here because the moon keeps coming up over and over and over again,
mm-hmm.
multiple times. So instead, he's continually turning into a werewolf. So it's amplified.
Yeah, instead of being on the monthly cadence or whatever, it's now whenever the moon is visible here, which is, like you said, a lot more unpredictable.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I don't want to say funny, but it is kind of funny. He was running away from his curse and made it worse.
Well, and we end on the note of him literally running away.
Exactly. Taken off into the woods. And I do believe we will see him again.
Oh, yes. We will. That much is clear just from some of the covers I've looked at. And he's interesting. I'm curious if that's what's going to facilitate Machiste and Mariah getting back into the story, exactly where all this goes.
Yeah, I'm interested too. Are they going to be, this is my thing, you know, not having ever read this stuff, are they going to be buddies? Is he a new member of the group? Is it more an adversarial thing once Mariah pops up and everything's good? I just want to see the interaction and where he goes. Is it a temporary thing? Is it permanent? I don't know.
And I don't remember.
Ah, so we're both going to see together.
Because at first when I saw him, it's like, again, I know this isn't Jason Blood, which is where I'd kind of gone. I'd looked at enough covers to know he does come back, so he plays a part in the story for a bit, but I don't remember the details.
Yeah, this was kind of cool because we got a ton of movement.
Mm-hmm.
We got different subplots going on. We got a characterization issue, even though it was a dream sequence that wasn't, but the characterization to show the bond between Shakira and Travis. So we got a whole ton of stuff in four issues, which just, once again, goes to the pacing of comics of yesteryear and today.
Well, and each issue had a beginning, middle, and end of something.
Yeah.
So it felt solid and substantial and fulfilling. Yet the quest Travis and Eitan started on at the end of the issue before we started here of Let's Go Find Jennifer, they've been kind of working through on all four of issues, but honestly haven't made a ton of progress on. But it doesn't feel like the story's stalled out either.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm actually, I'll tell you, the third of these issues, issue 46, was my least favorite. But overall, I really enjoyed these. The backup stories, if people were reading these and picked up the issues and are reading along, they're honestly skippable. But overall, Warlord is still a comic that I'm really enjoying.
I'm curious if those backups of OMAC have been reprinted anywhere else. Because, again, I haven't read the Kirby stuff, and this is a far cry from it. And it was interesting that at one point, I don't remember which issue, they started reminding people that OMAC was created by Kirby.
Ah.
Because it was a weak backup, and I recommend skipping it.
Yeah, that says something. Like, I recommend skipping it. Don't read this stuff.
Yeah, it was just all over the place. And again, right after a Warlord story where a lot is happening, it's well told, it's well drawn, for the backup to just seem to go wherever the wind blows it.
And what was weird is, I think it was Jim Starlin did the first issue,
mm-hmm.
and then he was never to be seen again, and we've had different writers, and it's not that it's the worst thing I've ever read, it's just, frankly, just boring.
I think Jan Michigan has written quite a bit of it, though.
Yeah, correct.
And we've got, like, Greg LaRocca and Vince Coletta on the art for the backup. I just don't think it's their best work, by any stretch.
I would agree.
Whereas, again, we've got Grell's stuff, and even Grell on a bad day is better than a lot of artists on a good day.
Yeah. Just a quick question, because haven't seen Grell doing anything. Is he out of comics, I'm assuming, now?
He's not a young man.
Yeah.
I don't think he's officially retired, although he may be, but he hasn't been doing a regular comic thing in a while.
Yeah, as I say, I haven't seen anything from him in a long time. I did buy his, I think it's called his Green Arrow run in omnibus format. I still have to read that. But I've been really enjoying this Warlord stuff. Once again, I will harp on this DC reprint the stuff in physical format for the stores, because it's a crime that this hasn't been optioned for a TV series like we talked about,
yeah.
Even if it's animated. And it's a crime that this is minimal cost to even put it out in a trade paperback, if not an omnibus, you know, just something.
I think they would have to go through and recolor it.
Probably, yeah.
And get it production ready again for modern production stuff. But I don't think, I mean, you don't have to get it written and drawn, so that's a cost savings right there. This seems like an excellent thing to do as a DC Finest, which is kind of, sort of, but not quite, DC's new version of the Epic collection.
That's a perfect one, yeah.
And I think this would be a good pick for the first non-superhero stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's just classic stuff that's just a ton of fun. And hats off once again to Grell for doing just a heck of a job with it, creating his own little world.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is the kind of property with the new regime in terms of the DC movies and stuff, seeming to want to stay away from the traditional superhero stuff. Instead of going for Amanda Waller or the Creature Commandos or something, this seems like it'd be something they could do.
Yeah, and it seems like it'd be a lot more fun.
I think so.
Just fun from an action and adventure thing. It has almost an Indiana Jones feel at times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could make this a really fun series.
Well, and with the success of the Game of Thrones, Spartacus, and all of those sorts of shows, even going back as far as Hercules and Xena and stuff, this genre, whatever you want to call it, I think does well on TV and movies.
It does, and it always has an audience.
Yeah.
And people seem to really love it. So, come on, DC, let's go. Warner Brothers, let's do it.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the Preview Spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the Preview Spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next Preview Spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.